Okay, everyone. Hi, welcome to Skype a Scientist Live. Today, we're going to be talking all about elephants with Caitlin O'Connell. So some housekeeping stuff. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about plant movement. And then Friday, we're going to be talking about bugs. And then starting next week, we have 3 weeks of every Monday through Friday, we'll have an activity to do. You can check that out at skypeascientist.com and then go to live streams and you'll see everything that we have going on. But at this point, I'm going to hand it over to Caitlin and she can introduce herself, who she is, what she does, and why she likes it. And then we'll go into all of your questions.
Okay. Well, hi everyone. I'm Caitlin O'Connell Rodwell. I am an elephant behavioral ecologist, and I focus on elephant communication, specifically the low frequency hearing. I have a faculty position at Harvard where I compare the elephant middle ear to the human middle ear so that we can understand how to make a better hearing aid, because elephants are at low frequency hearing, particularly in the arena of bone conduction. And we focus in the lab, but then in the field, I study all different aspects of elephant society and how it's similar to our own society. And I'm happy to answer any questions about that.
That's amazing. So could you tell us what the difference is between what we might consider normal hearing and bone conduction hearing?
Yes. If you think about listening to loud rock music that has a lot of bass, if you sit on top of the speaker, your whole body vibrates to the beat of the music. And for people with hearing impairments, a lot of times they can detect sound better because through whole body vibrations. So your skull is vibrating to the input of airwaves, like me speaking to you right now, which causes your inner ear to behave normally, where sounds go into the inner ear and then go to the brain, to the auditory cortex, and you perceive sound. Well, elephants do this in a way that they produce a very high impact vocalization. So it's made at a very high sound pressure level, which is 120 decibels, which is like a mini explosion, really. And as they produce that very high sound pressure level signal, it actually propagates in the ground. And so elephants can detect this signal in the ground, and they're doing it by freezing and having their whole body, actually the vibration goes up their legs and into the skull. And that causes their middle ear bones to shake and then send the signal to the inner ear, to the brain. So they do that very well. And we're trying to understand how they do it so that we can make our bone conduction hearing aids better.
That's amazing. Really cool. So Aubrey and Zadie would like to know, how is elephant society like ours?
It's fascinating. Elephants have politics. They have keys where they have a matriarch, kind of a second in command. They have low ranking individuals, and we have that in our own society. And we set up our recognized leaders, and some people trying to challenge leadership. It's the same with male elephants. They're set up in a linear dominance hierarchy. And why do we form hierarchies? I mean, in elephants, they form hierarchies because there's less competition over resources if you know where you stand. So you have less fighting, you're less likely to injure yourself. If you want to get to the water, you know you have to wait for the dominant individual to drink first, and then you drink. So it's more organized, and that way they can know where they stand and not get hurt. So in that very practical sense, they're similar to us, but that translates into a lot of social similarities. Mothers, aunts, the matriarch, they'll sometimes squabble over when, you know, they're not ready to leave the water hole, but the matriarch says it's time to leave, come on, let's go. And the others are thinking, well, I don't know if I want to leave yet, I'm still thirsty, or my baby's still drinking. So the kind of things like that, but also working together, a baby stuck in the mud, for example, two experienced moms would come over, bend down, coordinate, pull the baby out. They're very caring of their young, and the young are extremely playful, just like watching a playground out there, you know, teasing and playing and running after each other and pig piling on top of each other. It's very similar to our own play and growing up, and you know, mothers watching over the young.
Cool. Ashley would like to know, is the hearing and ear bone structure the same between different species of elephants?
That's a good question. We're just looking at that now. We have specimens of elephants that have passed away in zoos so that we can have their intact middle ear and compare between Asian elephant and African elephant. Elephants might have sensitivity to lower frequencies because they evolved in a forested environment, whereas the African elephant evolved in a savanna opened environment where the lower frequencies would attenuate in vegetation in a dense forest. The higher frequencies. If an elephant says hello, the higher frequencies would just get dissipated in the vegetation, whereas the low frequency propagates further. Well, so for an Asian elephant that lives more in the trees and the forest, they need that lower frequency in order to travel further. So we suspect that their middle ear bones are going to reflect that, possibly having a larger malleus, which is the middle ear bone that is indicative of bone conduction. Because it's heavier, bigger, so that when you're freezing in place, your ossicles move easier because they're heavier. So we suspect they're going to be heavier. So that's some of what we'll look at.
Cool. And are ossicles the little bones in your ear?
Yes. One of the defining features of a mammal is that we have three middle ear bones, whereas a reptile only has one, a bird only has one. And those three middle ear bones basically act to amplify the signal from the eardrum to the inner ear, just by there's joints and they move. It's kind of like a little motor.
Huh. Does that mean that mammals generally have better hearing than reptiles and birds?
They have a better range. I mean, birds have higher frequencies, and the dolphins can have a higher frequency than us, but that's a mammal. It's supposed to facilitate higher frequency hearing.
Okay, cool. Amelia, age 6, would like to know, what animals eat elephants?
Well, that's a good question. Not very many, but lions. If there's a big pride of lions and they can surround a mother and her calf, they can get that calf. That's why family groups like to stick together, and especially when they have a baby, they're more vulnerable. But lions can get into the family group if they have a big enough pride. Hyenas the same. They can get a small baby. Lions can get a little bit bigger, even up to maybe a 10-year-old. So it's dangerous for young males to stray. Sometimes they want their independence and they get a little bit further away from the family, and then they can be more vulnerable to a lion attack.
Okay, cool. That's scary. Zin and Alex would like to know, is it ever hard to not make assumptions about elephants based on the things we know about humans?
Sorry, you broke up there for a second.
I'm sorry. The question was, is it ever hard to not make assumptions about elephants because of what
your last
we know
question
about humans? Should I say that one more time? Uh-oh.
Yes.
Okay, one more time. Is it hard to not make assumptions about elephants because of what we know about humans?
So I heard the last part of your question of something about what we know about humans, but I didn't get the first part of the question.
Sorry. Is it hard to not make assumptions about elephants because of what we know about humans?
That's a good question. When we as humans look at other animals, we tend to be human-centric about how we understand them, which is a handicap, and it's important to recognize. It's a very important question. Just because we might behave a certain way, are we putting ourselves onto that other animal? And this is why we have long-term studies, so we can ask questions about different character durability of those individual elephants. And so we can say something like, one of our elephants is named Willie Nelson, and he's a big softie. Now, that sounds anthropomorphic, but I can say that because I measure his behavior. I've been measuring his behavior for every year for 10 years, and I can say, well, he's less likely to start a fight. He's very gentle with his friends. So all the different behaviors that we score that are aggressive behaviors or affiliative behaviors, we keep track of that. And then over time, we ask questions about how certain individuals behave and why they might be more aggressive or nicer or more diplomatic. And we can do that because we score behaviors. And that's how we can be more objective in our viewing of.
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. So next question is, do elephants have sophisticated language?
Now this into your previous question, I believe they do have sophisticated language, but we haven't looked to measure what exactly is different between individuals that they are cueing into that we are not. So there's a lot of emotion that's encoded into their language, and that has lower frequencies are more aggressive and higher frequencies are less aggressive. More modulation in a call is indicative of heightened agitation or wariness. So there's a lot of emotional content in a single type of call. So let's say a let's go rumble. The matriarch wants to leave the water hole and says, okay, let's go. It's time to go. Now, she could be very calm about that, and then her vocalization would be what's called monotonic, so it doesn't have a rise and fall in pitch. It's very flat. Nervous about something, then her let's go rumble will go and rise in pitch, and that tells everyone that she's scared, that something's bad is happening. We better hurry. We better run. So those kinds of encoding is more emotional, but it's the same call. So when you say, do they have sophisticated language, it's the same vocalization, but they understand just like we do. If I said, let's go, or let's go, they get that. But they also have individual recognition between individuals and between groups. And that's something we're trying to figure out. Certain calls are longer, have more modulation. So there's that kind of element to our ability to tell different types of calls. But we think that we're just on the tip of the iceberg, really.
Awesome. Okay, I'm gonna turn my video off, but I'll still be here and I'll still talk to you. I'm just hoping that'll help the lag situation. The next question is, how far can the sound of an elephant travel to other elephants?
Well, because sounds that travel in air can travel up to 2 to 4 kilometers, up to really 10 kilometers, and then sounds refract back into the atmosphere. It's Snell's law of physics, that your airborne sound can only go so far. Now, those sounds that propagate in the ground don't have an outer limit, so they can travel much further. So the studies that have been done in the wild, playback studies, show that elephants move and vocalize within 2 to 4 kilometers. They like to maintain acoustic contact with each other so that they can forage further distances away, but know that, okay, Sally's over there and Maggie's over here, and we keep contact with each other by vocalizing. And that range tends to be 2 to 4 kilometers, but they can detect each other up until about 10 kilometers, and then in the ground, much further.
Awesome, thanks. The next question is from Bella. Why are the ears of elephants so big? Is it necessary for them to function?
There are several reasons why the elephant ear is so big. One of them, if you can imagine, elephants are so large that they need to cool themselves. They're in a hot environment. So there's a lot of blood vessels in that very thin ear. And when it's hot, they flap their ears back and forth. And that allows more blood to flow through the ear and send cooled blood to the body. So that's one reason, and a very important reason, why the African elephant ear is bigger than the Asian elephant ear, because the Asian elephant, you know, their ears are much, much smaller, and they don't have to cool as much. Their bodies are smaller, but also they live in a more forested environment, so they don't get as hot. So that's one very important physiological reason. The other reason is to detect sounds better. So elephants, when they're listening in the air, they hold their ears out like a parabola and they scan. And that big ear allows them to funnel sounds to their ear canal. So those are two very important reasons why elephants have big ears.
That's so cool, thanks. Sandy would like to know, how do elephants recognize who's the leader?
That's an excellent point. And that gets back to how elephants have politics just like we do. Recognizing the leader, when you are born into a society where there's a matriarch and your mom fits into that hierarchy, you behave as all the adults around you behave, and you see that your mom and your aunts are all following one individual. And so you learn to follow that individual, and the matriarch is making decisions about safety and where everyone should go and when. So you learn that as you're born into this matriarchal society. Then for males, they leave the family at about 12 to 15 years of age, and then they enter a male society where it's very similar. There is leadership. Now, leadership and dominance can be two different things, but in elephants, it does appear that males get an advantage by following that dominant individual, and so we're calling it leadership.
Very cool. The next question is, what is your favorite part of what you do?
My favorite part of what I do is going back to the same place every summer. My field site is in Etosha National Park, Namibia, and I get to see the same individuals. Elephants live just as long as we do. I get to see those same individuals, how they're getting on in their families, and you know, what new babies have arrived, and what kind of fun is surrounding that new baby with the older siblings that I saw being born 2 to 4 to 6 years ago, and how that the baby politics is evolving, and how the mothers are getting along, and it's fascinating. It's just like being an anthropologist and having a secret window into this other society.
That's super cool. What a special thing that you get to do with your work. My squid lived like 9 months. So not the same. All right.
It's really cool too.
Squid are amazing. Yeah, squid are, in my opinion, the best, but you don't get that personal connection quite as much as you do with an elephant.
Yeah.
Leila would like to know, or Layla, do elephants have deep relationships, and do they cry?
That's a good question. Elephants do have deep relationships, just like they live as long as we do. These females are growing up together and having their babies together and having their grandbabies together. It's a very, very closely bonded society. And it's very important to have such close relationships because you're protecting each other. You're growing together, and elephants have similar emotions to ourselves. I've just been writing a book about ritual, and one of the chapters is on grief. And so I have looking at the literature surrounding this topic, and elephants and chimpanzees are very similar to us. When a special individual passes away, elephants actually bury them just like we do. They'll ceremonially place dirt on top of that individual, that special individual, and chimpanzees do that as well. So, and chimpanzees are our close cousins. So elephants are right up there in how they treat grief just like we do.
Very cool. Do you prefer one species of elephant over another?
That's an interesting question, because Asian elephants and African elephants do have slightly different characters. And I have learned this by working closely with them in a captive environment, where trainers would say that an Asian elephant is more like a cat. They're more discerning, they're a little more wary, they'll watch you and decide if they like you or not. Whereas an African elephant's more like a puppy. Hey, let's play. Oh, and it's kind of fun and floppy, and oh, I guess I'm a dog person, so maybe if I was a cat person, I might appreciate that it takes them longer to decide to like me, so maybe that's more special than just liking me right away, if you see what I mean. I think they have that difference as far as what your interaction might be as a human with the elephant.
Very cool. What kinds of animals did elephants evolve from?
They had an aquatic ancestor, which is why some of their hearing and some of the fat structures in their body are a remnant of having an aquatic ancestry. So they have very dense fat in the bottom of their feet and inside the nasal cavity, which is very similar to the dolphin melon, which facilitates sound being transmitted into the dolphin in the water. Elephants have that same thing, and we think it's to help sounds transmit from the earth environment into the animal, into the elephant. So that dense lipid-like fat in their foot pad and in their, we think facilitates a coupling of the sound to the body from the ground. So that those are maybe remnants of an aquatic tribes communicate. Another aspect is they're able to close off their ear canals. And we think that was a remnant of being an aquatic animal, which facilitates in the wild now, they could close off their ear canal and, you know, say it's really windy out and they're trying to pay attention to a sound, they can close off their ear canal and then better focus on the ground, making it more quiet for them to be able to detect the ground-borne vibrations. So there's a number of elements of their aquatic ancestry that benefit them today.
Cool. That's super awesome. Stephanie would like to know, how did you become an elephant scientist? You're doing what I want to do when I grow up.
Part of it was serendipity. I was an entomologist, and I always loved animal communication. That was my big thing. You know, I love frogs, insects, anything that had communication as a key element of their behavior. And I traveled to Africa as a in between my graduate degrees, and suddenly was offered this job to study elephants, and I've been doing it ever since. I think if I tried to study elephants or great apes and planned to go to Africa to study them, it would be much harder than having fallen into it. But if that's what you want to do, I would suggest help you learn about large animal ecology and behavior and volunteer and in different elephant nonprofits to get experience and, you know, read books about elephants and do that sort of thing, because it would have been easier for me if I had had a long plan ahead of me. And I really looked for opportunities, which is how I ended up being an entomologist. I loved the scientists that I was working with, and I got inspired by them. And I think that's really important, to find mentors that inspire you and figure out how to spend time with them or do things that they did. Ask advice like you're asking right now. It's great.
I think that's really important advice. Like finding good mentors is often more important than what it is you're working on.
Exactly.
Yes.
Because they can train you to be a better scientist, and then you can decide what it is you want to focus on.
Exactly. Cool. Well, thank you for that advice. And the next question is, why do elephants have a trunk?
Elephants, that trunk evolved over time. If you see early drawings of proto-elephant type animals, they look more like a tapir, if you know what a tapir is. They have a small nose that's pronounced, and then for the elephant, it got longer and longer so that they could reach vegetation higher than they could have if they did not have a long nose. And so that nose grew longer and longer, and they became more successful at reaching food, and also it also works very well as a snorkel too. So
cool. Awesome. So you've talked a lot about how elephants have a matriarchal society. What are the male elephants up to during all this time?
That's exactly the question I asked when I started studying males. We were waiting for female groups to come in, and we were doing experiments on their ability to detect different types of calls in the air or the ground. And they tend to come in the later afternoon and then into nighttime, whereas the males seem to hang out all day and like having fun, back slapping in the water hole, yucking it up. And we're like, well, what's going on with these guys? And it turns out they have just as rich of a bonded group as the females do. They're almost like family. And when the males leave the family between 12 and 15 years of age, it's kind of a vulnerable, traumatic time for them, because they want their independence, but they don't really want that they can spend time with and bond with. And there are some individual males or small groups of males that don't really want to take on these youngsters. Like, why should I have to share my food and have to deal with their emotions? Because the young bulls are very expressive and they want to interact and engage with the older bulls, but the older bulls are like, yeah, whatever, okay, come on, stop that. And so there's some discipline involved. And so why would they take on these youngsters? And that's one of the questions that we have been looking at over time. And it looks as if it benefits the older ones to take on these youngsters, because there's social interaction is good for them, and they're less stressed when they have big groups. So it looks as though males are not loners like we used to think they were. They're actually very social and very bonded to their good friends.
Awesome. The next question is, so we've got two questions about elephant memory. One is just, is it true that elephants never forget? And then the other question that's related is, do elephants ever forget specifically the trails that they walk?
Okay, so you blocked out in that first part, but I did hear about their memories.
The first question was, do elephants ever forget broadly? And the second question was, do elephants ever forget the trails that they walk?
Oh, okay. I'll start with the second part of that in terms of the elephants are migratory animals. They migrate for ecological reasons. They live in dry environments, and when it rains, they move toward the rain because that means they're going to get better food, more to drink, there's more to eat, so they move. Now, elephants don't know where to move if they didn't have a matriarch and older individuals to show them where to go. So they have these cultural paths that they have been following for hundreds of years, and is a collective memory where if a matriarch is young and she's never been taught how to go to these places to survive a drought, let's say, they don't do nearly as well as older matriarchs that remember those places. And these studies have been done in Tanzania where after a very serious drought, the families that did better were those with older matriarchs that remembered places to go to survive the drought. So that memory is more of a long-term collective memory. But now let's talk about individual elephants by themselves. What do they remember? And, you know, we all say that elephants never forget, but they actually have a larger area of their brain dedicated to long-term memory and language than we do. And that memory, we've actually begun to test their memory by asking them, there's a series of things to ask an elephant about how well they can remember. And the one thing you want to know is, do they imagine things in their mind so that they can think, let's say, I know where my favorite fruit trees, the marula tree, when it's ripening at the end of spring, and I'm going to migrate towards that fruit tree. Well, you have to ask the elephant, that means that you have a representation of that fruit tree in your mind. So what we did at the Oakland Zoo was to train an elephant to look at a picture of an object. And we used her favorite fruit food, which is a banana. We presented Donna the elephant with a real banana, and then we showed her a picture of a banana versus a blank page or another fruit, and said, touch the banana. So she had to take her trunk and touch what she saw, the real banana. She had to say, okay, this is a picture of the banana. And so over time, she learned the experiment. She knew what we wanted to ask her, and she touched the banana, the picture of the banana. And so our next test was, okay, then if she understands the representation of a banana in that picture, what if we picture somewhere in the environment that she would recognize? And so that's steps that a scientist has to take in order to ask real questions about long-term memory. And that has to do with representations in your mind, object permanence. So these are the things that we're trying to get at to really understand how good their memory is.
That's awesome. That's such cool research. The next question is, can elephants swim? From Lila, age 9.
Elephants are very good swimmers. There's evidence in Southeast Asia with Asian elephants where they would swim between islands, even swimming to Sri Lanka from India, and that's how some of the elephant populations spread. I don't know about that information in African elephants, but African elephants are very good swimmers. They will swim across rivers, across lakes. The one thing that's is if they have young babies, they're just like whales. They have to float them to the surface so that they can breathe. And but they still can swim very well. It's that, you know, when a mother has a young baby, they might not cross a river if it's flowing rapidly or very deep. But in general, yes, they're very good swimmers.
Very cool. About how long does it take an elephant to reach adulthood? Oh, dear.
Well, a female can become reproductive at 9. A male can only come into the hormonal state of must, which allows him to be reproductive and competitive with other males, is about 24 to 25. But they can reproduce much younger. About 18 is pretty much the youngest. If they don't have other males around them, they can go into must much earlier than if they courtship of older bulls in the society, where they suppress them from going into must until they're older and can kind of wield that testosterone. Testosterone can cause, well, it's we don't know if it's a cause, but in relation to having high testosterone levels, these younger bulls can get much more aggressive than if they were a little bit older going into must. And that's been shown in several parks in South Africa where they reintroduced elephants. And what they did in two different parks, not realizing that they didn't have the oversight of much older bulls. And so those young bulls went into the hormonal state of must too early and started attacking other animals, behaving very bizarrely, killing rhinos. And because they have a contentious relationship in general, but this height, and what the managers did was put older bulls back into those parks, and suddenly the younger bulls went out of must and stopped this aggressive behavior.
Whoa, that's so cool. Oh, amazing. Yeah. Okay, so we've got time, I think, for one more audience question, and then we'll ask the same question we ask everybody. So the last one, here's an interesting question. Who financially supports science on elephants?
Well, right now I'm funded by the National Institutes of Science, National Institute of Health, to study hearing as a low-frequency model of humans. Now, that's not the typical way that elephant science gets funded. It's usually the National Science Foundation that funds more long-term ecological research. There's foundations, National Geographic gives small grants. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has an African and Asian elephant fund. There's a lot of smaller agencies that want to support elephant conservation and fund projects that way.
Very cool. Okay, so we always ask all of our scientists the same two questions before we wrap up. The first is, what do you wish everybody in the world knew related to your area of expertise? And the second question is, what do you wish everybody in the world knew about literally anything? It can be as small and silly or big and significant as you'd like.
Okay. The first question is, what would I want everyone to know about my research, or
yes, about your area of expertise? Yeah,
about elephants.
Sure.
Are you still there?
I am here. Sorry.
Well, I'll say about elephants. I wish that everyone could understand how similar they are to us. And that might confer a better appreciation for why we should keep them on this planet. And I think that people don't realize how similar elephants and great apes and many socially intelligent animals are to us, and how special they are, and how much we can learn from them about ourselves. I wish that people understood more about them and how similar they were to us for that reason. In your second question, my immediate go-to would be to understand what we're doing to the environment and how special this planet is that we live on. And it's there's no replicating that planet. We have not found anything out there in space that shows us that there's a planet like ours yet. And to protect it before it's too late. And we know from climate change that there's been devastating effects on the ocean, coral reefs, elephants, in terms of habitat change. Climate change has a huge impact on our world. And I hope that politicians and you as individuals making a difference in future politics keep our precious planet in mind.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. This was a really, really cool kind of research to hear about. Like, we really appreciate you taking the time. And thank you, Erin, for signing for us. We really appreciate your time as well. So general housekeeping stuff for later in the week. Tomorrow at 1 p.m., we're going to be talking about how plants move with Joyce Cherry. And then on Friday at 1 p.m., these are all in Eastern time, we're going to be talking about bugs with Gwen Pearson. Both of these are going to be really cool sessions, so I hope you join us. Other than that, as you probably know, Skype a Scientist is a nonprofit organization working to bring science to as many people as humanly possible. And so if you can support our program, you can do so at paypal.me/Skype a Scientist or patreon.com/Skype a Scientist. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so all donations are tax deductible. Thank you again, Dr. O'Connell and Erin, for being with us today. This was really special. And we'll see all the rest of you later this week.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate all the great questions.
Yeah, thank you. Do you have anywhere on social media or anywhere else that you'd like to plug?
Well, you can look on Amazon for my books. Caitlin O'Connell, I've written a number of nonfiction books about elephant society, male society, books about how to become an elephant scientist, and Baby Elephant in the Wild, and my fictionalized book about the ivory trade is called Ivory Ghosts.
Amazing. Wow, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Okay, sure. So check out Dr. O'Connell's books, and everybody else, we'll see you later this week.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.